Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. Whether you're tuning in through cyruswebb.com, we're glad you all could be with us today. Those joining us on the radio dial in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM, we're glad you all could tune in today, as well as those joining us in Atlanta at 106 Live. We're glad to have all of you with us as well. I'm really excited to welcome Chef Rossi to our program today. She's not only the CEO of The Raging Skillet, but she's written a fascinating book about her life that really takes us into not only her own personal journey, but also food as well. It's called The Raging Skillet, the true life story of Chef Rossi, a memoir with recipes, and food is definitely a big part of this book. We're going to talk to Chef Rossi about this journey of not only sharing her story with all of us, but also what it's been like for her to reflect on her life and reflect on the role of food in her life and the people around her, and also, of course, to be able to see the success she's been able to have as well. And if you're just hearing about the book, we'll tell you a little bit later how you can get it for yourself. But Chef Rossi, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Hello, I'm very happy to be here.
Well, look, I'm excited to be able to speak with you for sure. Really enjoyed the book I was sharing with you before we went on here. I recently wrote my review on Amazon.com. We're going to tell our audience a little bit later how they can get it. But I want to begin with, the reflection, because, you know, and what we've been doing a lot on this program, Rossi, this year has been kind of looking back and thinking about all the great things that have happened for us this year, the lessons we've learned. What was it like for you in compiling this book and not only thinking about the role of food, but also the role of individuals in the person you are today?
Well, you know, the whole thing happened sort of organically. Like, it wasn't like I just woke up and said, I'm going to write a book. I would say, you know, I would probably trace my journey with the whole chefing and writing thing to maybe the age of 13 when my mother got her first microwave. And that was the moment that all of those slow-cooked Hungarian dishes that she'd been making that simmered for longer than, like, relationships I've had, you know, all that ended, which I thought would be fine with me because we just wanted normal food. I mean, this was the 70s. We wanted pizza and pasta. But the second that microwave arrived, we were basically sitting around the kitchen table eating astronaut food. And eventually I saw it as my call to arms. I just sort of sprang out of the table and started making pizza bagels and using the oven, which hadn't been touched since the microwave arrived. And immediately, my family started treating me differently. Like, they started being nicer to me and asking my permission before they stole my underwear and things like that. And I was like, wow, you know, food is power. I got to remember this. And from that point on, I started cooking my weirdo, kooky recipes. But eventually, I started also writing down the things that happened in my life because my life has been a really psychotic ride. And it was just too good a story not to tell.
Right, right. And I think it's so interesting because, you know, for me in just really discovering a lot about you, Rossi, because of this book, it definitely allows us to kind of be able to understand the person who people know just from hearing either The Raging Skillet or hearing Chef Rossi. I mean, was that an easy thing for you? I mean, to be able to share your journey of discovering, your journey of learning and knowing?
Yeah, I think I'm probably a natural-born storyteller anyway. You know, I got out of being, you know, harassed and bullied when I was a kid by just telling stories about my wacko life. And I have been doing this radio show out in Provincetown, Massachusetts on WOMR for the last 12 years where I read a memoir about my wacky life and then follow it with recipes. So the format of telling a story and then following it with recipes that are kind of relevant to the story has been something I've been doing for the last 12 years, and it sort of naturally became a book. It wasn't like I immediately got a book deal the second I had the idea. I mean, that took 5,000 rejections later, but, you know, the idea was there.
Right. And now, of course, as you said, you're able to share a part of your story and, of course, the role of food in your story. And you had me from the very beginning. I recently spoke with another chef on this program, Ricey, and what I said to her was this. I was speaking then to Julia Tershin, and I said, you know, any cookbook or any book that mentions pizza is already going to be a favorite of mine. And you began the book with a pizza recipe, so I knew I was going to like you from the very beginning. But you mentioned the microwave, and that was a funny story, you know, as the, you know, in the beginning of the book, people were able to learn about that early on. And it's so interesting, too, about, you know, how amazing that was for people. And then to take into account, Rossi, how people feel when they eat your cooking. I mean, I'm not talking about family, but others who are able to discover you. I mean, that being special, I think, is something that everyone wants. But when people outside your family recognize that, was that validating for you?
Oh, sure. I mean, when I first got into catering, I mean, this was the 80s when I decided I was going to cook for a living. And women were really not welcome in the kitchen, so it was kind of a rough ride. But on top of that, all of the food in the 80s that you would see in the catering industry, it looked gorgeous, but it tasted like linoleum. And I just couldn't understand why it couldn't taste great. So we started catering events, and I mean, I didn't work for anyone who marinated their meat before they cooked it, as an example. And I was like, why can't we marinate it? And why can't we sear it before we put it in the oven? Why does the chicken have to be rubber chicken? So I just kind of started putting all this sort of mama love into the food. And eventually, I would cater a wedding, and people would say, oh, my God, the food's actually good. I can't believe it. And they would tell someone, and they would tell someone. And so we developed this word of mouth in the industry over the last 27 years now of food that looks great, but it actually tastes great. And generally, when people call me up, and I had someone call me up recently and said, I don't want any sauce or any marinade. I just want clean, neat, kind of, for lack of a better word, sterile food. They really just had a look they wanted. And I just said right then and there, go with another caterer. My heart simply will not let me do that kind of food. I have to put soul into it.
Right, right. And I think that being able to recognize that is so important. Ross, I'm so glad you said that, because I think there are so many people, especially in the creative community, who just want to get the check. They want to be able to do what they love and you get paid for it. But
exactly.
I think to be able to know, you know, what you want to do and what you want your work to represent, and also realizing a part of you you know, is in that food. I mean, definitely says so much. So, you know, to talk more about the recipes and kind of how they are coupled, the other thing you were able to do, which is really interesting, is to take us into your life through pictures as well. I mean, talk to us about that aspect and the pictures you were able to share and what it was like for you to reflect on those pictures and where you were then.
Well, I mean, I was thrilled to put the pictures in. I wasn't sure at first if they were going to have room in the book for the pictures, but they really kind of make it. Like, what I looked like as a teenager, you just have to see it. I mean, it's sort of Janis Joplin meets the Sex Pistols. You know? So it kind of had to be in there. And my mother, who was such a larger-than-life character, and the whole book's dedicated to her, I mean, she was totally insane, literally, but she also taught me how to laugh and how to make fun of myself and have self-deprecating humor. And this woman went out to dinner in a house dress with slippers, and that even in her 50s wore her hair in pigtails. Sort of think of her as a larger version of whatever happened to Baby Jane. So it's like you really kind of have to see these people to believe them. There's one picture in the book, I think it's like Harriet, Marty, and their demon seed. It's like my mom,
right.
You know, Yiddish mama, and my dad is like World War II guy, just trying to like get along. And then this rocker chick freak, their daughter, and I think the picture sort of said it all.
Yeah. And I think the reflections, you know, again, going into, you know, how they kind of go along with your own life. I mean, do you find, I know for myself, I was my grandmother's primary caregiver, Rossi, the last 9 years of her life, and there were certain foods that I could not cook after she died initially, because it would automatically trigger a memory, which would then have me crying while making cornbread, or you know, or when I was trying to scramble an egg, which I would do for her every morning. I mean, did you find that, because there were some sadder moments in the book, especially
sure.
in relation to your mother who you mentioned. Do you find that that's still the case, that there are certain things that not only are nostalgic for you, but also kind of do bring you back to a darker part of your life?
Well, I mean, there's a recipe that I don't think I actually made it in this book, but it'll be in the next book, don't worry. It was something my mom used to make, and it really was nothing. It was just slow-cooking cabbage and onions until they're almost caramelized, and then tossing them up with egg noodles and margarine, because my mother was on a margarine kick. You know, we were like not a butter family, with a little bit of pepper, and that's about it. It was like just called cabbage and noodles. It was some Hungarian dish from my mother's childhood. We love these noodles like you can't even imagine. And, I mean, I've cooked them since then to try to understand, like, what was so great about cabbage and onions and noodles. Like, big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow I never could cook them the same way my mother did, probably because I wanted to use butter instead of margarine. But to this day, like, if I walk through a grocery store and I see egg noodles, it always makes me sad. And I have to admit, I don't think I have put it on a menu since then. Probably should break through it and put them on a menu, but that was just something that was all about my mom, and maybe she'd just stay there.
Yeah. You know, and then there was the empowerment factor. I'm going to get more into that, Rossi. But for those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We're excited to welcome Chef Rossi to our program today. She's the author of the book, The Raging Skillet, The True Life Story of Chef Rossi, a memoir with recipes. We're going to remind you a little bit later how you can be able to get the book for yourself. You know, there is a powerful thing that you wrote in the book, Rossi, and as you were kind of thinking about your own journey, thinking about where you were, but also where you wanted to be and how you saw yourself. And I wanted to actually read a bit of this because I think this is interesting, and I want to talk about this moment for you. And you were talking about at that time about being able to have something of your own. And it's for those who have the print edition of the book, it's on page 135. Rossi writes this: "When I look back on it, I realize that my rough and tumble ways dissipated along with the graffiti and the crime of the East Village." And then you go on to say, talk about, you know, putting forth a serious effort and the pushing your fledgling catering business, as you call it, into the stratosphere. And this is the sentence that really got me. "My motivation was simple. I was about as employable as I was demure. I needed my own company." I mean, how did you get to a place of courage where you knew that you were not meant to just be with others, that you were meant to stand out, especially professionally?
Well, I had an enormous motivation because the more I worked for other people, the more I realized I was simply not employable, partially because I had no respect for authority figures, partially because I couldn't keep my mouth shut, partially because I couldn't lie to save my life. So if I was working for a chef and they made something that was disgusting and they asked me what I thought, I would say, "It's disgusting." And partially because I'm completely incapable of getting to work at 9 o'clock in the morning. So I thought, well, I have to have a business so I can't be fired and get other people to get to work at 9 o'clock in the morning and I can show up, I can sashay in at 10:30 or 11. I mean, I'm the world's worst morning person. And I can be the authority figure. So I just kept pushing it and pushing it. And I guess I was catering for really some years, I don't know, 5 or 6 years or so, before I was simply able to turn down all other work and just work for myself. And that was really a happy day for me. I would never again have to, like, listen to someone else's opinion that I knew was terrible, and I would never again have to be at work at 9 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, businesses, you know, there are high and lows in the economy. Certainly we had a terrible one. We just survived in 2008. But I never, ever, a lot of other caterers went out of business. I never, ever considered it, because I simply did not have the option of doing that. I knew that I would rather die than work for anyone else, so I put that motivation and plowed through it.
And for you, I know for many people, and we talk about on this program a lot, Rossi, about finding our voice. And for everyone that voices differently, I know for me, I cannot sing, I cannot dance, so that is not my way of being able to contribute something of value,
right,
at least, to the world. That's
right.
Not my thing. This platform has worked for me and others. Have you found that that is it, that through your cooking, that you have been able to not only to speak, to let people know who you are, but also to let them know the value that you have?
I think it's a combination of the cooking and the writing and even my painting career. They all sort of come to the same point. Like, I'm really a product of 1978. I'm a product of Joan Jett and Pat Benatar and Deborah Harry and really, you know, rocking women. Like, when I close my eyes in my mind, I mean, I'm singing like Janis Joplin and Melissa Etheridge, you know. So I knew that I couldn't have a career as a rock star in a stadium with Heart backing me up. So I guess I somehow fell into achieving that kind of badassery in other ways. As a painter, I mean, I was always doing these wild acrylic portraits. I saw myself as Andy Warhol with a vagina. As a writer, I just wanted to be, you know, fresh and honest and tell, you know, basically write exactly the way I talk. And as a chef, my food is absolutely a reflection of who I am. I mean, I'm a product of a very odd combination of Jewish and white trash, which is really an odd mix. So, I mean, I'm probably the only person you're ever going to meet who can say they've had kishka and grits, as an example. And so, and then I went on to develop Jamaican food and Creole and Cajun and, like, all over the map, and became the multi-ethnic wedding queen. That's my forte. So it's like, if the bride is Jewish and the groom is Jamaican, there are not very many people you can call for Jewish-Jamaican food. But in fact, we gave them some fantastic latkes with jerk chicken on them, called them jatkas. So I just have a lot of fun.
Right. And, you know, I think, too, it's another thing, and I've never thought about this with the cooks and chefs that I've talked to on this program until I read the way you phrased it, Rossi, in the book, because you talk about, I can't remember what chapter, but you talk about, I remember, about being, it wasn't that you wanted to be, at the time, what you were writing about was catering weddings, and you were saying it wasn't that you wanted to be a quote-unquote wedding caterer, but the weddings that you had catered, the people wouldn't stop telling people about you. So you
right.
then became known as a wedding caterer. Was that ever a concern? Because I think about this mostly, honestly, and I was having this conversation recently with an actress about being pigeonholed into a certain role because you've done something, you've gotten known for something. I never thought about it, though, that it could be true of any creative. Was that a
sure.
concern of yours, or was it just the fact that you appreciated the fact that people appreciated what you brought to the table, literally?
When there was a brief period of time where I thought, oh, wow, being a corporate caterer would be easier. You work Monday to Friday, you have the weekends off like a normal person. And doing weddings is very hard, not just because they're very hard, but it's because 99% of the job has nothing to do with cooking. When someone hires me for a wedding, and I have many people that have, for the fall of 2017. So they're already calling me. They're already wanting to meet me and discuss things. I mean, it can be a year of conversations before that wedding happens. It's 99% psychology. I think I had to use every bit of the knowledge I acquired from being a bartender with my wedding clients. They're all nervous. They're all neurotic. There's always somebody who doesn't agree with somebody. But eventually, I guess I just sort of warmed up to it because I thought, it happens that I probably should have been a psychiatrist if I wasn't a wedding caterer. So I'm really good with the moms. Moms love me. And I always just tell everyone the truth. I mean, I can't lie anyway. I mean, Lord knows you don't want me on a poker game. I'm incapable of lying. So I just tell everybody the truth, and some people don't like it, and they hire another caterer who lies to them. They find that more comforting. But I don't care. I really, life is too short to lie and live a life feeling dishonest. And I just have fun. As long as I'm telling the truth, my life is okay. The moment that you start lying to people, it feels bad in your stomach, and it's a whole different experience.
Do you think you are, well, maybe I phrase the question this way, Rossi. Could you have imagined that the brand that you started as, you know, as a chef or as a caterer would expand the way that it has? It's not only, of course, writing, but also, you know, also being, you know, a media personality yourself. I mean, could you have imagined that this would be the life that you would be living?
You know, it's happened slowly and gradually and organically over such a long time. I mean, I've been catering for 27 years. I've been writing, getting published for, I guess, about 27 years also, that I didn't even realize how much it was percolating. I remember the first time I had a bride come to me, and she said, she talked about her wedding dress, and she said, "I better not read about this on your blog." And, I mean, I was like, what? How did you even know I wrote a blog? It was like the first time. I was like, really? She's like, "I just did a search on you on the Internet. I think this was pre-Google." And I was like, or maybe it was I never heard of Google, but she had. And I was just like, oh, my God, people can go on the Internet and do a search? I was, like, terrified. And on the blog that I had been writing at that time, it was like an early dinosaur blog, like one of the first blogs. I called it Rossi Rant, but I've since then dumped it in favor of the Huffington Post. Anyway, I thought, oh, my God, you know, I've been out of the closet on this blog. I've been quite loud about my politics on this blog. Like, I'm going to have to go back and censor myself. I had this moment, and then I thought, you know what? Anyone who doesn't want to hire me because I'm gay or doesn't want to hire me because I vote Democratic, you know, or whatever else, you know, like, bug off. Who needs you? Life's too short.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that is the thing, and that brings us full circle to how we began this conversation, Rossi, and as we let people know how they can get the book. I mean, when you decided to share now what is The Raging Skillet, the book, what has that part of this experience been like for you in knowing that not only are people able to know more about you, but also to know about what it really takes to be able to not only be authentic, but to be able to enjoy life in an authentic way?
It's been wonderful. I mean, I mean, this is my first experience being on a book tour. I've been on my book tour since last October, so now it's just going on a little over a year, and I didn't know what to expect, and I'm glad I didn't know what to expect. I've flown to Denver and St. Louis and Naples, Florida, a bunch of places in New Jersey, Brooklyn, Manhattan, Cape Cod, Wellfleet, I think Los Angeles, I don't know, I've been to like at least 18 or 20 stops, and everywhere I go, people are so happy to see me. And when we get to the question and answer part, the Q&A, they ask fantastic questions. And then they all come up for the book signing part, and they tell me particular chapters that resonated with them or changed the way they feel. I've had mothers who tell me their kids are cooking for a living, and they had no idea what it went into it before. I mean, it's just been such a validating experience. I did a bunch of Jewish book festivals, too, which have been great. I remember the first one I did, I had another author and a moderator, which is really easy. The second one I did, we had a couple hundred people in the audience, and I asked who was going to be on stage with me and who was going to be moderating. And they said, "No, it's just you. You're the headliner." And I was like, "The headliner? Oh, my God." And I looked outside, and my name was on a sign. I was terrified. And I thought, what am I going to talk about? When I get up on stage, and I'm really scared because they wanted me to talk for 45 minutes. Do you know how long that is? 45 minutes. And I get up on stage, and I look in the audience, and I see all of these punims. That's what my mother would call a Jewish face. I mean, they could have been my mother, my aunt, you know, my cousin. I mean, they all sort of looked distantly related. And suddenly, I just felt so comfortable. And, I mean, they practically had to yank me off that stage with a cane. Like, I just kept thinking of more things I wanted to tell them. So it's been validating, but it's also been empowering because I didn't see myself as a public speaker before the book tour. I knew that I was comfortable on the radio, but but I didn't feel comfortable speaking in front of large crowds. And now it's like I feel like I'm just falling out of bed. It feels so natural, and it's just such a great feeling. I'm loving it so much.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, when you're doing what you love and you're walking in your purpose, you know, I think that's how life should be. And congratulations to you on that, Rossi. Again, everyone, Chef Rossi has been our guest for this segment. We've been discussing her book, The Raging Skillet, The True Life Story of Chef Rossi, a memoir with recipes. It's a great book with recipes literally from the very beginning. So make sure you all are adding it to your own reading list. You can get it, of course, through our friends at Amazon.com. As I mentioned earlier, I've already posted my review there. You all can find it there. And then, of course, you can be able to order it for yourself and share it with your friends, too. Rossi, how can our audience stay connected with you and keep up with what's coming up next for you?
You know what? They can go to theragingskillet.com, which is the website for my catering company. But there is a big section about the book, and you can find my Instagram and my Facebook page and my Twitter and my Twitter and my water and blah, 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 all that social media stuff. I need a 13-year-old to teach me.
Well, good. Well, make sure you all do go to theragingskillet.com to be able to stay connected with all things Rossi. And Rossi, it goes without saying, you are welcome back here anytime. Looking forward to the next conversation with you.
Me too, Cyrus. You're a blast.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. If you all came in late, you missed part of the conversation with Rossi, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off to air. The link is already available through our social media site. So head over to facebook.com/CyrusWeb, or you can go to twitter.com/CyrusWeb. If you click on the link there, you can listen to the show completely for free and share it with your friends from there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. You will make it a great one.